to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So first, we say we cannot live through the dead, but we can invite the best in them to live through us. So we say woof woof to Susan Griffin, friend of show, indefatigable truth teller who departed, and Jane Goodall, of course. Again, Jose Andres writes a beautiful homage. My friend Jane Goodall was the wisest and most compassionate person I've ever met. She could make anybody feel hopeful about the future, no matter the hardships of the present. Just this weekend, she wrote to let me know she was thinking about what she could do to alleviate all of the suffering in Gaza and Ukraine and Sudan and beyond. She was my hero, my inspiration. I will miss her every single day, as we will. So, in keeping with that, here we are, Revelation Fest, Act 4, Tragedy Yearns for Redemption, Act 5, Let the Dead Speak. So we are welcoming Peter Janney, an American writer, psychologist, and lecturer based in Beverly, Massachusetts, best known for his book, yes, here we're going to feature it as a premium, Mary's Mosaic, The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and Their Vision for World Peace, in which he makes a detailed case that ex-CIA wife and John F. Kennedy mistress Mary Pinchot Meyer was murdered by the CIA in order to cover up what she had discovered about the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Welcome, Peter Janney.
Thank you so much. It's a joy to be here. I'm so glad we're doing this.
Yes, especially now, because I interviewed you when the book came out, which was, I think, 13 years ago, and I have all my notes and the obituary of beautiful, here she is, right, Dovie Johnson Rountree. We'll get to her, stuck in the book, and here we are. We might say, again, the crucial pertinence of your book is that the tyranny before us now is a monster animation of all the unaddressed corruption and villainy in America's past. You know, we had sort of normal evil. Well, let's dive into that. So do you feel like now, I mean, then, always, but especially now, this story of Mary Meyer is humming with pertinence, that she wants to speak, in a sense, through you, through your work, through all of us?
Absolutely. I think she and her soulmate, JFK, are working very, very hard in another dimension to keep the pot boiling. And I'm just so glad that more and more people are awakening to the terrible energy that's moving through our planet right now in terms of personas like our president. It's a very critical time, and people have to make the choice to awaken, in my opinion, because that is going to be one of the cutting forces that is going to potentially give us a chance to turn this around.
Yes, and let's speak of our I don't remember when I first heard of Mary Meyer. I think it was even before your book, because I'm related by in-laws and affinity, and all of us, you know, both you and I kind of grow up, you know, 5 years apart, but in a similar milieu, you know, like reading your book, I go, well, because I remember as a little 12-year-old where I was. She was born on October 14th, my birthday. Also, to the side, Charlie Kirk's, you know, we go, let's end assassination in its minor and larger forms. But and then we met, and we met years back, I had to remind you, but we met right where she was murdered, assassinated on the canal in Washington, D.C., outside Georgetown, right? So
right.
So that was humming. That was a good place to meet, right? And there we go. So yeah, you call JFK and Mary Meyer's relationship a relationship of redemption.
Yes.
More
so for him
than for
her. But for her, in the sense that she finally found in this life a male polarity of which she began to experience a profoundly deep union with. And I think that was part of her ignition for even becoming more and more of who she was.
Right. Well, the way I tell the story, and you tell it in much, much greater and important detail, like all these people, but all stories lead us to all stories. This is a particularly great one that, you know, we start with the CIA, founded by Dwight Eisenhower, also born October 14th, just for the humming of it all, and that these young men, ruling class men, Harvard, Yale, Princeton men, return from World War II as world federalists, as kind of idealists, and then the CIA or its nascent, you know, whatever, goes, come over here. You know, yes, of course we want world peace, but how better to do it than by assassination, murder, and kill. Come on over here.
Right.
So, Mary was married to Cord Meyer, whom I also remember as a little girl, as a spooky person. And yes. Then I had all kinds of friends who knew Mary, her brightness, her charming, and I'll pitch it to you. But the way I remember from your book and also Life and Telling and In-Laws, is that JFK and Mary Meyer met, you know, in prep school, right? And she thought he was a silly flibbertigibbet. And yes. Even later, after he was a war hero and everything, she basically grabbed him by the lapels and said, You have important stuff to do. And he's like, oh, I've never had an equal before. Okay.
Right. Right. Very well put.
And part of the weaving too, which is so crucial, is that she, you know, late 50s, early 60s, early, was a great appreciator of cannabis. And she said that, according to you, that it helped her go navigate the horrific grief of the loss of her son, who was killed in a car accident or hit by a car, and then her affinity, and that she actually goes to Cambridge, Massachusetts to meet Tim Leary, right?
Correct.
And to sort of imply, like, I have some important people here. I think that entheogens might help the nation, you know. And then you say, because I think in the early edition of the book, I remember it as that, you know, they certainly smoked cannabis, JFK and Mary Meyer, in the White House together.
Yes.
And then
yes.
Did a low-dose LSD, but now you say psilocybin.
I think from all the notes and stories that I amassed, I think psilocybin was really the vehicle. And it was gifted to her through her friend Tim Leary.
Right.
So she would not tell Leary who she was cavorting around with. He always suspected that it was somebody extremely well known. I don't know if he expected at that time that it was actually JFK, but it did not surprise him when he found out, you know, who her polar opposite was.
Right. And it's crucial to all of us now that I think it's on a Sunday where they do the low dose of psilocybin in the White House. And it's the following, I think, Wednesday that he gives his astounding speech at American University. Everybody, I will post it in the links and everything, but you can look it up. And it is an astounding speech in which
yes,
he calls for the end of war. And he calls
yes.
for compassion for the Russian people. And Khrushchev is so impressed, he plays it later on Russian
yes.
airwaves. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, it was also, I think there was also a dimension of this where it so struck a nerve in Khrushchev that his alignment with JFK only got even more intense. Khrushchev was rumored to have cried for quite a while when JFK was assassinated, because I think he knew that was going to be the beginning of an even bigger Cold War ethos that would
right.
sweep the country.
So Yeah, so he does JFK in that speech after his psilocybin low dose with Mary Meyer in the White House, you know, really call for, you know, our evolution requires we outgrow war.
Yes.
And have compassion, and we're all in this dream together, basically, you know, and it really is an entheo gift. You know, the elder plants, the elder mushrooms, flora, fauna, fungi, you know, kind of, they're still trying to help us out now, you know, but really way back then, you know, and that's, I think, an important, astounding thing. And for those of us who remember that, I remember as a little girl, Khrushchev, you know, pounding his shoe on the desk at the UN, you know, and go, we will
yes.
bury you. But we will bury you is well, we will bury you. People are like, oh, it's terrible. But that's actually a Russian saying. It just means our ideas will outlive yours, right? It's just, you know, Russian dark humor,
yes.
insight kind of thing. But people didn't get that.
They were scary.
Yeah, they were scared. So take us back to Mary Meyer, wherever you want to go, the relationship of redemption of a man having a truly equal relationship with Mary Meyer, and I've had, you know, I mean you're very tapped in, but I've had her on my ancestor wall since I can't remember, and that idea of like, hello Mary, do you want to say anything now? And I have
right.
her, the chart of her murder and the chart of, I mean, all of those things, you know, which are, and the book, you know, is Mary's Mosaic, which we're offering for a pledge of $100 just to keep truth saying on the air, 800-439-5732. You can have this astounding book. It's really, because it's crucial. We know all these, many of us know all these names, like there's Dulles Airport, right? And Alan Dulles, and that's all woven in too, because my childhood friend Anne Roosevelt, her father was Kermit, right? Who overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran, and Anne and I both described her father. We were little girls as a large rabbit in a bathrobe with a gun. We kind of intuited what he was up to, because he was a wimpy guy, and it didn't take much. You know, the first attempt at overthrowing Mossadegh sort of failed, and the Shah went back to his coffee houses, and Gustad was like, oh, I'm sorry. And Kermit was like, one more time. Right? And for very little money, and this is important to all of us now, for very little money, thousands, he paid thugs to beat up people in the street and to beat up the press, right? And that time, the coup worked. And then Kermit Roosevelt goes back to D.C. and the CIA is like, onward to Guatemala. And Kermit said, no, I'm out now. Let's hand it to the Dulles brothers. So they hand assassination to Alan Dulles, right? Is that, help me out here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, assassination back in the day, you know, late 50s, 60s, was really one of the primary action tools of our government, of the intelligence network of our government.
Yes.
And you know, people like Alan Dulles, Cord Meyer, Jim Angleton, I mean, they really shaped this ethos and carved out a number of plans of action where assassination was considered a very viable trajectory in order to meet the goal.
Right. And when we might have a nostalgia for past normal evil rather than this crude thing, but it's all related, right? So, you know, I also grew up, you know, in the periphery. My dad was a New Deal congressman under FDR, and, you know, in that realm, so not CIA, not Republican at all, but they were around the edges. You know, so that's all kind of crucial. But I did grow up on occasion seeing, as a little person, you know, Yale, Princeton, Harvard people, you know, entertaining people at their summer houses with cocktails, and then stepping into the back room to order death, right? Latin American country leaning to the left, eliminate them, and then coming back out going, oh, bunny and waffly and boo-boo and huzza huzza here, how jolly, right? So it had a veneer of creepitudinous gentility, and now it's just crude, right?
Yes.
But it's a natural. And what do you think about it? I mean, that your book, Mary's Mosaic, you know, and that crucial story, and it really is, you know, a chief dedication of yours to be a detective to tell this story. It's very powerful, and I think now is even more. It wants to go forth in a big way. We can talk about that and magnetize the opportunities for that, which you already have brewing, which I think is a great idea. But that it is essential for us now. Yes, this monstrous, grotesque tyranny in its most vulgar form, you know, is an animation of unaddressed corruption and villainy in America. So we have to dissolve all that. We have to bring all of that to light, all of that to accountability, all in one thing. It's not just Trump. It's not just, you know, the oligarchs. It goes way back, and that's what you're bringing this forward to us. So, Mary, wherever you want to jump into the narrative, there's so much, you know.
One of the most important things, I think, for your audience to remember is we are looking at an extraordinary woman here. I mean, really extraordinary. This was a soul who was just fiercely independent, and she was on her own mission. I do think the province of psychedelics was part of her mission. I think she became aware of how powerful these substances were and how potentially valuable they were for human transformation. And so she made it her business to really get acclimated in this vortex and to use it as much as she could. I mean, you know, it wasn't just her relationship with Tim Leary, although that was highly significant. I mean, she went to L.A. and, you know, followed the footsteps of a lot of artists who were seeing psychiatrists, who were, you know, experimenting with LSD and psychedelics. And, you know, Mary was just, I think, on the cusp of this cultural revolution that was beginning to sprout these incredible seeds in our country. The late 1960s being the culmination of a culture in the midst of a profound transformation in terms of what the younger people like myself of my generation were carrying the torch that she had lit. And it was just an incredible time to be alive.
Yes. Well, and again, remember, this is the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. So she really is a first responder. And then, yes, according to Tim Leary, who's not a completely reliable narrator, but, you know, we have nuance and complexity on the table. He was all enthused going, right, it's the geishas, it's the women, you know, who will initiate the uninitiated Mars boys team into sanity.
Correct.
Yeah, and so, but Mary was more than a geisha, right? Again, real equal. It just wasn't even in Tim Leary's mind. The idea of equal was not quite there yet, working on it.
Not to sound trite, but, you know, Mary really was the divine feminine consciousness in its full expression during that era. I mean, she was really on the vanguard of bringing forth a level of female consciousness that, of course, most men were absolutely terrified of and wanted only to suppress. And she let it rip.
Right. And this is really important as a longtime, you know, astromythologist in the world, but in DC as well, learning that You know, sometimes on quirky occasions, you know, people in full military dress would come for readings. I'm like, don't look at the uniform, don't look at the uniform, just look at their chart. And it was clear that, you know, military Mars guys married hippie artist chicks, right? And it was sort of it was to balance them out. It's like, here, you handle my spiritual life and I'll go off and keep doing war. And at some point, like, Mary was like, no, you handle your own maturity, you know, and you support me, you know, but no more of this, outsourcing your Venus. But it is a phenomenon, that kind of Mars Venus dance, and now we really want true equality. And then, isn't it true? I remember from book that there was some, you helped me out here, that Leary and Mary Meyer may be involved, but Washington Society ladies like Kay Graham, who was the owner of the Washington Post, you know, were also interested in doing psychedelics to heal their marriage or to do whatever, which is a very trippy idea. These are pretty straight people. But it sort of makes sense. And it's a Mars Venus thing again, because I remember, because we have all these weird connections, you know, Ben Bradley, Kay Graham, that in Watergate, you know, Kay Graham she's threatened. She's threatened, right, by the CIA about not revealing the Watergate story. And at the point, she waffles. She's like, I'm not going to let these hot-headed reporters, ruin my paper, right? So she almost killed the story, right? And then, you know, I guess her soul, her sanity, something spoke to her, and they did, right? So this issue of threats of press, right, and kill the story or not, we're going backwards to a time where somebody's, you know, conscience prevailed over their, you know, expediency, right? So that seems important. But yeah, there's Kay Graham and again, married to Phil Graham, who killed himself and who was my dad's golfing partner. And I told you also too that once Phil Graham came back with my dad going, we played golf and your dad bet you, I think I was like 8, and he lost. So now you're mine. And it was terrifying because it was the first deeply insane person I'd met. You could tell, like, whoa, you know, alcoholic, breath, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, he was really fragmented, absolutely.
Right, so then he killed himself, right? And it's like, and part of me was like, I could feel that, you know? And so that was not an equal relationship, and then Kay Graham goes on to take, she basically inherits the Post, and then equivocates, and then comes through, right? So all these Washington Society ladies, well, we might want to try it again, right now, where they're still there in a way, you know, psychedelics could help. Yeah, so all these characters that we might need to know, that your book is sort of like a playlist going, wait, who's well, you know, tell us more about Alan Dulles and James Angleton, and who in your dream would play James Angleton in the series or in the movie, which is possibly brewing backstage.
Well, you know, my pick for Jim Angleton is John Malkovich.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and my pick for Alan Dulles is Anthony Hopkins. Now, I think when they become really aware of the script, when the script is written, you know, this is the kind of sort of historical, cultural story that men like this want to be associated with, you know, because it's a big deal. It's really the changing of the guard. It's the end of an era. It's the beginning of a new era. And people like Alan Dulles and Angleton and, you know, Richard Helms, Cord Meyer, they were, Ben Bradley, they were all part of the diminishing vanguard. And I think there was a lot at stake psychologically and culturally going on for all of them.
Right. So we're looking at, you know, loss of conscience, expediency, and complicity, you know, and we all want to inhale our complicity, whatever is going on, we're complicit. But once we recognize it, we can inhale our complicity back from tyranny and all these things, and Revelation Fest. I mean, I think that, you know, your book, written some time ago, but it's humming, and it's got new attention, and the story wants to be made. We love that, and I love, you know, all your casting John Malkovich is like, yes, so tell us again who Jim Angleton is.
Well, Jim Angleton was a, you know, very brilliant, young, brilliant man who gravitated toward intelligence. He was part of, you know, the famous World War II intelligence network. I can't remember the name at the moment. I'm a little bit of a brain fog. But, you know, when Alan Dulles took the reins and, you know, in 1947, the National Security Act, the CIA was established. You know, I think at that point, Angleton made his move with Alan and said, look, you know, I want to be the counterintelligence chief here. I may be young, but you and I know I have the stuff to do this and do it in a way that needs to be done. And so, you know, Alan Dulles took the bait. And this was really the CIA in the early 50s into the 60s was in part really the story of this Machiavellian character known as James Jesus Angleton. I mean, he could not have had a better name.
Yes. All right, so let's do a little tour in the story. So there's the American University speech. We think part of JF Kennedy's soul was opened by the relationship to Mary Meyer, and with the help of psilocybin. That's great. And then he's assassinated, and Mary is. And like, oh, and she and Bobby Sr. are talking, and Bobby says, we will get rid of the silly Warren report once I'm president. I'll be the next president. And Mary is like, yeah, okay, we're going to do that. And then I think you reference her as, and she's renting a studio in back of Ben Bradley, the Washington Post editor's house, right, with where her journal is. Okay, so Mary's... his garage. So Mary is talking again. You speak about her almost kind of naivete about the danger, right? She didn't really believe that a member of the ruling class would off a member of the ruling class. We spoke about this disbelief, cultural disbelief. And so she's talking freely, and then she's goes for a walk on the canal and is shot, you know, one time in the neck, and then one time point blank between the shoulder blades, right? Everybody tries to pin it on this hapless black guy who's fishing and slightly inebriated, right? And that's another thrilling part of your book. It's one of the best legal thrilling narratives ever. Because Dovey Johnson Rowntree, I have her obituary right here. She lived to be 104, 1914 to 2018. And she is a black civil rights warrior and defense lawyer. And she takes on the defense of Ray Crump, right? That's his name, I think. And everything's, as you delineate, stacked against her, right? Because it's like huge forces, police, just want to wrap this up. Here's a, you know, hapless black guy. Let's do it. And she delves and gets an innocent verdict, which is astounding, right? Do you want to just say a little more about that?
Well, I mean, Dovey Rowntree was, you know, a truth seeker. You know, the biography written about her by my friend and author Katie McCabe is really a wonderful piece of reading. I mean, Katie really has a way of encapsulating this story and making it continue to live and breathe in its own right. Because this young black woman was just deeply courageous in her beliefs. And she knew the law, and she knew how to present the law and use it. And she wasn't afraid of men, particularly of white men. I mean, she just, if you read the trial transcript, she just makes mincemeat out of the prosecutor of the case, this guy Alan Hantman, who's just a conceited old fart. But he is unprepared for the level of preparation and expertise that Dovey is able to demonstrate. It's really the trial transcript. I spent an entire summer with it. I took it to bed with me at night because there were just pieces of it that took everything I had to really begin to understand what was going on here. And, you know, again, it's one of those stories in the early 1960s that I think turns a corner on civil rights, on, you know, doing what it means to do the right thing, what it means to stand up. And we have beautiful characters in that era, fortunately, to deal with.
Right. And again, very resonant to now. We go, yay, defense lawyers, civil rights warriors. Right, because just in her obit that I have stuffed into your fantastic book, Mary's Mosaic, we're offering that. I will do serious pitching in a moment, but you can leap ahead by calling 800-439-5732, we're also carried in Los Angeles, KPFK, by calling 818-985-5735. We're expanding to everything. So, yeah, just in her obit, it says her best-known case, Dovey Johnson Rountree's, involved the black day laborer accused in 1964 killing of Georgetown socialite and painter Mary Pinchot Meyer, also who reportedly had an affair with President John F. Kennedy. She won an acquittal despite what initially appeared to be damning witness testimony. Her handling of the high-profile legal matter was praised by Robert S. Bennett, who observed the proceedings as a clerk for the judge, and decades later represented President Bill Clinton, blah, 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 blah. It goes on. But yeah, no. And again, well, that's somebody to, like, call on, too. Come in, Dovey Johnson Rountree. You know, we can't live through you, but we can invite the best in you to live through us. You know, come on in. It's thrilling, and she is, you know, and also her front page Washington Post obit, right? So that's something. You know, her face is so fabulous. It's like Maya Angelou, these powerful black women who are etched in every part of their life, including their face, with a penetrating gaze and incredible etched definition and powerful defiance. And it's like, oh, thank you. And to Maya Angelou, too, who, again, these are deconditioning, you know, allies. So, and I told you that I did readings for a lot of these people later as I grew up. Because Mary Meyer was killed on October 12th, 1964, at 12:26 p.m. in Georgetown. I have the chart. The image for Mercury overhead is men placed under arrest, accountability. And it's like, yeah, that's what Peter's working for. That's what we're all working for, right? Accountability. So it's still humming, right? It's still, you know, knowing that, you know, to bring accountability and to bring justice, like, who did kill Mary Meyer? And a lot of her relatives are like, no, it couldn't be the CIA. They wouldn't do that to one of their own, you know. And so this deconditioning is part of your dedication, right?
Yes. And don't forget that with JFK's assassination, you know, the Warren Commission was really set up to be a political tool to keep people away from the truth, to keep people focused on the illusory bullshit that this government, our government, keeps trying to generate in order to avoid the real deeper truth of what is taking place. So, you know, there are a number of stories about people in that era that I think all speak to this ethos of the flower buds of transformation, sprouting seeds.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's crucial, and the disruption of, you know, many forms of ruling class. That was the prep school, Ivy League ruling class, CIA. But then there's always been eccentrics. I remember the summer I spent at Findhorn in the north of Scotland, you know, and it was the summer that Nixon was impeached. That's how I remember it. But Donald First, who was head of the World Federalists, right, who did not become a CIA guy, came all dressed in a suit and everything. And he talked about anything for which there's a name, there's a spiritual divinity, there's a god of the North Atlantic, and in the Dag Hammarskjöld meditation room at the UN, you know, positive works for peace are going on. I'm like, I've never seen anybody in a suit talking this way before. That's kind of liberating, and you kind of go that way too. And then it was my friend, later friend Lenny Stern, who was about to go for that walk with Mary Meyer, and then called and left Mary a message going, oh, Mary, I just heard that somebody was killed on the canal, so we should be really careful. Okay, so there's all these strands, right? And then the whole issue of conspiracy, there are distracting conspiracy hoo-ha nonsense, you know, but let it not take us away from the authentic delving, you know, and because I'll say that even though it says, you know, on the cover of your book, you know, how the CIA, you know, murdered Mary Meyer, a lot of her family are like, no. But your book is very careful about here's facts and here's implications, right? I mean, you're really deft and careful about that, don't you think?
Well, I mean, yes, I do. And you're really, in reading that book, I mean, you are really looking at 20 very hard years of research, you know, up yeah. and down, back and forth, just an immense amount of time of research. Now, you know, there's a reason that I feel like I was fortunate enough to have the education that I did in my life, because I had some very brilliant teachers, both in prep school and in college, you know, who really opened me to understand, first of all, what good research really is. I mean, I, you know, studied under this guy at Princeton by the name of Martin Duberman, who's still alive today in his mid-90s writing books. And I was fortunate enough to, you know, get to know him, and particularly when he was working on books during that era, you know, Black Mountain College, Paul Robeson. I mean, just incredible pieces of work. And so the relationships that I had with my teachers were really accelerants for the evolution of my own consciousness.
That's wonderful, wonderful genius. Oh, my goodness. Right, I just have to thank some people. I'm reaching over here. Wow, Anonymous in Napa just donated a huge, interesting sum. Thank you, Anonymous in Napa. We're on the board. Sarah in Oakland says, I think Caroline really embodies Pacifica's mission in a way that most hosts don't. No, we don't need to criticize other people. They'll turn on us. Caroline has a broad range of guests on her show and offers a place for discourse and compassionate understanding. Anyway, wonderful. Thank you. I'm going to copy that comment, Sarah in Oakland. Thank you so much. Let me do a little pitch here before I reluctantly let you go, but Peter Janney, but not quite yet. If people call, we can keep you. So we are offering many, many gifts. You know, you can go to kpfa.org or kpfk.org, and many, you can get swag, you can get bumper stickers, but I'm really focusing on two books, and they work really well together. Mary's Mosaic by Peter Janney for a pledge of $100, just to keep these voices and this information and this excavation and this degree of dedication on the air for the Visionary Activist Show. And last week's guest, John Fugelsang, Separation of Church and Hate. Brilliant book. Again, you know, don't argue with evangelicals. Make them argue with the teachings of Jesus. Really useful. They go really well together. That's for a pledge of $150 by calling 800-439-5732. That's 800-439-5732, or if you're in Los Angeles, 818-985-5735. Here we are. I just want to hold on to you a little bit more because, we can think of this as part one. But I do love that you are dreeing your weird, which is the Celtic phrase for playing your role in destiny. Because when we last met, you actually gave me your birth time, so I have your chart. Jane Goodall actually, her Mars is on your ascendant, so she hands you the baton too. She was really dedicated, and so are you. You know, and you're, you know, if I didn't know you and was just looking at your chart, I go, were you born into a family or a culture with secrets? Well, a family or a culture with secrets gives birth to Peter Janney and Columbo, which is, you know, like we should be addressing this. And it's powerfully humming now. You know, I mean, your chart, your message, your story, this book are powerfully humming now. And so we do want to reciprocal blessing, you know, that the projects that are brewing, you know, your really competent, ethical, interesting allies who are brewing this as a series, as a documentary, as a whatever. What kind of good wishes would you like us to send you about this?
Well, you know, I want to extend to your audience, their inclusion as to, after they've gotten to know Mary and perhaps read the book, who do they think in today's culture could best elaborate the qualities of who Mary was in a film role? What actress would you be inclined to think about? And, you know, this is something that I spend a lot of time thinking about because, you know, this bio series is getting serious. You know, it's got Leo DiCaprio's father backing it on the Apple platform along with, you know, this very well-known Hollywood producer, David Womack, who's done some just incredible films in his career. But, you know, he has brought in Langdon Page, who did the documentary on Navalny. Langdon Page is going to be doing the documentary on Mary's Mosaic, and he's very excited about it. So there's some talent coming into this. And, you know, someone asked me, well, Peter, you know, who are you going to get to, you know, consider playing Mary in the film? And the actor, I want to tell your audience that the actress right now that intrigues me the most, are you ready?
Sure.
Her name is Claire Danes. And if you don't know her work, you really owe it to yourself.
And is this news to her or
yes.
This is news to her.
At this moment it's news to her, but Claire Danes has already worked in another film with my producer David Womack. When I think she begins to really understand the nature of the story and what it's about, I would be very surprised if she was not intrigued by it. Doesn't mean that she'll take on the role. Doesn't mean anything. But she is the epitome, at the moment anyway, of the caliber of actress that I think really can rise above all the froth and foam and do justice to the character of Mary Meyer in a film script.
That's great. And because what we're really up to, and this is part of your dharma too, is, you know, ongoing for everybody, but to stir the positive soul of this country, its honesty, its dedication, what it's meant to be, not what it's become, but also what it's meant to be and never has achieved yet. That's where we got to go with the thing. So that's powerful, good, powerful, good. And your chart is humming, and I'm going to reluctantly release you, Peter Janney, so I can do dedicated pitching, although we're doing pretty good. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Anne in San Jose, who pledged for the book Mary's Mosaic. Wonderful. The CIA conspiracy to murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and their vision for world peace. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Anonymous in Daly City. Anonymous is always so great. Thank you, Sarah in Oakland. Yeah, again, that's right. Thank you, Anonymous, always. Thank you. Thank you, Anonymous in San Francisco. Anonymous is fantastic. Separation of church and hate. All right, I'm going to reluctantly release you, Peter Janney, so I can dream my weird, but let us stay in conversation. Let's think of this as part one, because it's so rich and it's so connected to everything. And it's really, it's always been useful, but now is the moment, yeah?
Yes, indeed. And I think as these films begin their trajectory of manifestation, you know, I think both you and I will be able to see, okay, what is the right moment now to do another segment like the one we've just done today in terms of really positioning this story.
Yeah, in terms of the documentary and the series, it's like, sign me up now, right? I can't wait to watch it, right? It's like, that's really, really super great. Thank you so much, Peter Janney. We're in cahoots, in perpetuity. May it be so. Thank you, and I'm going to go back to pitching here right now. Thank you. And we're just going to play a teensy little break music just as a segue, because it's so rousing. This is a revelation fest, and it's to keep our spirits up. Again, emerging from Act 4 tragedy to craft Act 5 redemption, a culture of symbiotic mutualism. And here's just a little smidge of music to do our transition. It's from the Liberties of Our Country. Here we go.
March through. The rich drink their whiskey, the poor pay the Jew. But a voice in the darkness, it rises, it grows. It's the sound of the people, the whole country knows. No king but the people, no crown on that head. No throne for the tyrants, no tears will we shed. We'll stand by each other. In cages they lie, the sick and the weary, left broken to die. But their names are our thunder, their memory our flame, and the song that we carry will carry their name.
There we go. We want some rousing. We want some rousing out of tragedy, and the delineation of tragedy arises. That woofy song, you can dance a jig to it. Let's imagine all the beloved dead and Mary Meyer dancing a jig to it, going, yes, listen to my voice now, you know, because people's charts respond even after they're dead. And Mary Meyer is humming. I've always felt kinship with her, and she's been brought alive. Brought alive even more by Peter Janney, our guest with whom we've just been listening, and we will do more. So we're offering this really worthy book because it hums with pertinence. It's like you got to know Mary's Mosaic by Peter Janney for a pledge of $100. It's let me reach over here. It's full of post-its and whatnot. But see, it's full of riveting pertinence to now. Like, let's go backwards to go forwards. So Mary's Mosaic, the CIA conspiracy to murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and their vision for world peace. Yeah, truly vision for world peace, you know, enhanced by psychedelics, by psilocybin and cannabis. It's all related to everything we've been covering for 30 years on this show. It's powerful. So you can have that book for a pledge of $100, right? And you can have Separation of Church and Hate, A Sane Person's Guide to Taking Back the State from Fundamentalist Fascists and Flock-Fleecing Frauds by John Fugelsang. It's excellent for a pledge of $150 by calling 800-439-5732. That's 800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org. Also for our Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, everything audience, you also can have these books, you know, all of us lucky citizens and ever dedicated to being ever greater participatory citizens. KPFK team can call 818-985-5735, extension 2. That's 818-985-5735, extension 2, or kpfk.org if you're in Southern California. Okay, so here we are, team. So, yeah, absolutely. And thank you. Thank you, everybody. Anonymous is so wonderful calling in. Again, we're doing pretty good. We're doing pretty good with generosity and enthusiasm and kindness and notes. You know, and this is a show where we really, all parts of everyone are welcome. Yeah. The non-rational, the unreasonable, as well as the completely factual. We put facts on the table, and Peter Janney does that really well. It's very responsibly researched, and again, all the players that have led us to the tyranny of now, right? We really, you know, to effectively make our way through this and to preserve and animate the promise of democracy here and globally in a real way, not a corrupt way, you know, this book is really essential that way. Again, 800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org or Los Angeles, 818-985-5735, extension 2, or kpfk.org. So we've got a huge, great team here at Pacifica. Again, this is for truth tellers, you know, for beautiful, beautiful Susan Griffin, friend of show, who just departed this life. And she was a wonderful guest and a wonderful writer and a wonderful truth teller. We're pledging for truth as the essential, the sine qua non for democracy, you know, revelation fest, and keeping our spirits, you know, rousing, going, right, we will speak out, we will arise, we will embrace each other, we will take care of each other, we will watch each other's backs. You know, that's part of the dynamic, and beautiful KPFA, of course, is part of that dynamic. So here we are. Again, you can have this great book, Mary's Mosaic, The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and Their Vision for World Peace. Yeah, well, it's like, you know, we go backwards. You know, my dad worked for FDR, and he had a great vision before he died of what would happen in his next administration, you know, home and food and a job for all beings. That was a great idea. So we want to go backwards and reanimate the desirable part of everything. Just checking the quirkiness of my connection here. But do call in while I'm checking my connection. Owen Anonymous says, my favorite show on the air. Thank you, Anonymous. Thank you very much for your pledge. We're doing pretty well. I'm just going to jiggle my... Never mind, we're all in this thing together. Okay, well, it's good enough for the moment. Here, it sounds a little staticky, but never mind that. Keep calling, 800-439-5732 for KPFA, Pledging to the Visionary Activist Show. And you can have these wonderful books, Mary's Mosaic for a pledge of $100, Our Separation of Church and Hate by John Fugelsang for a pledge of $150. They're both Virgos. Both of the authors are Virgos. Language crafting, deep delving, critique and healing authors, which is great. And then just for a little bit about how we really want to support Peter Janney's. Oh, that's great. And here's Rose in Los Angeles. Oh, thank you. Bless your heart, Rose in Los Angeles. Pledging. I've been a listener for a long time. Listen on my computer. Would like it to go to what's being advertised now. Okay, there we go. Oh, that's great. Dwayne in Merced, pledging for Mary's Mosaic. I've enjoyed this segment very much. Well, it's enjoyed you too, right? So we're all citizens together. We're all in this thing together. Again, please call 800-439-5732 in the Bay Area, or 818-985-5735 in Southern California area. And while you're doing that, I'm just going to finagle with my connection here. There we go. We just don't know. We're aspiring. Oh, that maybe. No, it didn't quite help. But anyway, thank you for putting up with the static, possibly, that you hear or don't hear. But here we are exhorting. Oh, and thank you, Stephanie, in Pleasant Hill, California. We're doing great. We're doing great, team. Everyone is a citizen participant where all parts of everyone are welcome. All of our participatory skills, our imagination. You know, and it's like when we weave, well, we critique, important, and then have a vision. It's our old standard that everybody gets, which is, you know, mirror, window, door. Here's a mirror. Oh, my God, it looks horrible. We turn the mirror into a window, but look how beautiful it could be. Look how beautiful it could be, the vision of symbiotic mutualism, everybody looking out for everybody. And then we turn the window into a door. Let's go. Mirror, window, door, team. That's also what we're pledging for. Here's the critique. We got to have that. But critique without vision is complicitous with dominance. Here's the critique. Here's what could be. You know, and always very savvy. You know, here's what people are pretending it is. Here's where it's, you know, nonsense. You know, but again, we're offering, I'm super pleased with the enticements, the pledge enticements. Although, of course, any amount is completely welcome. Really, you know, again, magic is simply a willingness to participate, to cooperate with everything, but also just adding dedication by the pledging of this $5, by the pledging of this $500, by the pledging of this $23, you know, whatever. May it be that sanity and peace and citizenship and democracy prevail. You know, so it's magic, you know, and money is just Neptune. You know, all of our words, our metaphors for money are all water, currency, cash flow, liquidity, rising tide. You know, we want to irrigate the parched fields of our own democratic localness and our airwaves as well to bloom in defiant beauty and defiant beauty and democracy and all of those things. So, yep, there's nobody on the board at the moment, but we could use more people. That would be really exciting. We're about to hit a very exciting number. Oh, it's Barry in Scotts Valley. That's great. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. Yes, thank you, Barry, who says, great program. It was Mae Brussel. Thank you. Thank you, Mae Brussel. That's great. Who was the first to investigate the Kennedy assassination and Paul Krasner's The Realist and call out the Dulles brothers of the Office of Strategic Intelligence, OSS. Thank you. Yes, yes. We want to know our history, our corrupt history, that it may be compost, you know, to may all tyranny be composted into nutrient for democracy. But it really helps to know the nature of the compost, right? The nature of the tyranny, like, oh, that it was, you know, insidious. You know, thank you so much, Barry, who, again, pledge. That's wonderful. So we're inviting everybody else. We're in our final minute, I think. You know, wonderful, wonderful board up. Rod will keep me on time and honest. But you can have these great books by calling 800-439-5732. Mary's Mosaic, really great, for a pledge of $100. Separation of Church and Hate by John Fugelsang, fantastic strategy. Fantastic strategy. Thank you, Carol in San Leandro, wonderful, who pledged for Mary's Mosaic, says, great show. Yes, keep us going, all of us. We're all in this dream together. We can do it. You know, if we pledge, if we paddle together, if we delve together, and if we animate the desirable vision, we can do this thing. You know, dedication, progressivism is wonderful, but it's not enough. We need our magic. When you hear something desirable, we go, we see it. We see it into being. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Rod Akhil. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Peter Janney. Thank you, Mary Meyer. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Again, you can find me at Patreon, Visionary Activist Show. Woof, 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 woof. Thanks, team.